Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the November NJEDA Telephonic Board Meeting. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public will be advised to press 1, then 0 on their telephone keypad to be placed in queue to speak and provide a comment. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star then 0. I would now like to turn the conference over to the chairman, Kevin Quinn. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Tim, can you read the open public meeting notice?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice of this meeting has been sent to the Star-Ledger and the Times at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Manera, can we do a roll call?
Yes. Chairman Kevin Quinn.
Here.
Noreen Giblin from the Governor's Office.
Here.
Banking Commissioner Marlene Caridi. Commissioner Caridi. Okay. State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo.
Here.
Labor Commissioner Angelo.
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for DEP Commissioner Lasaret. I think she may be late. Okay. Phil Bellagia. Virginia Bauer.
Here.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Aisha Glover.
Present.
Marcia Marley.
Here.
Robert Shimko.
Here.
Rosemarie Hicks. Okay, not yet. Okay, Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Great. Thank you, Manera. First item on the agenda is we need to approve the previous month's minutes as well as our executive session minutes from October 13th. I just ask board members if they could state their name for the record when making a motion or a second. Can I get a motion to approve the October 13th regular meeting minutes?
Fred Dumont motion.
Caridi, thank you. Second. Can I get? Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Now, can I get a motion to approve the October 13th executive session meeting minutes?
So moved, Angelo.
Thank you. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let me move to my chairman comments for this morning. Recent data shows that COVID-19 is declining. Businesses are rebounding with our support. The holiday season is a great opportunity to support our local businesses. Over the coming weeks, we have Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday, and Giving Tuesday for nonprofits. And I'd ask everyone to please support our local small businesses and our local nonprofits. We are moving forward with the launch of the Economic Recovery Act program. Today, the board will vote on new rules governing the Aspire program. The Aspire program will support commercial and residential development. This program is particularly important in the aftermath of COVID-19, with workers moving to New Jersey and businesses rethinking their office space needs. Aspire will include measures to ensure transparency and community engagement. We are optimistic as 2021 draws to a close with COVID-19 and retreat, small businesses reopening and thriving, and new incentive programs attracting businesses and new projects creating jobs. We're expecting continued momentum in New Jersey's economic recovery. Lastly, while I've shared my appreciation of the EDA staff and their extraordinary efforts over the past 2 years, it's been a while. And in this season of giving thanks, a very special thank you to staff and your families for all your hard work and dedication over the last 2 years. It's just incredible to think about the tradition, the transition from a work to a work from home environment, the COVID 19 related programming, the design and implementation of new incentive programs coming out of the Economic Recovery Act, all the while executing and maintaining our existing programmatic efforts. You each deserve some special appreciation during the season of giving thanks. And I thank each and every one of you for all your efforts. Tim, turn it over to you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for those very kind sentiments and comments for the staff and for our team. We really appreciate that. The team has worked unbelievably hard and unbelievably well, as I think all of our partners across state government have. Over these last 18 months or 2 years, whatever it's been, time is starting to lose relative sense here, but however long this period has been underway, our team has, I think, responded to and met the challenge and exceeded the challenge at every step along the way. So I echo your gratitude for the team here. I'll be brief because we've got a good amount to get through, as the chairman mentioned. Just a couple of recaps of the last months or so activity, just some updates on some things. As of the last count on our COVID relief programs, we've now approaching 95,000 approvals for grants, loans, guarantees, technical assistance. It's approaching $700 million of approvals and distributions. More than 1,000 businesses have been approved for UNRE and IDA-related grants. And applications under both those programs are continuing to be approved every single day. I would just note, you may hopefully saw some maybe press coverage about it. We had the privilege of joining Tara Colton, Emily Apple from our team had the privilege of joining Governor Murphy for his very first post-reelection press conference and announcement on Friday in New Brunswick to announce an additional $10 million to support the Sustain and Serve program. That'll take that program to a total of $45 million. It means 4.5 million meals purchased from restaurants that continue to need the business to give to folks and distribute to folks in need of a good and decent meal, particularly as we approach the holiday season. That the potency of that and the importance of that only grows. 400 restaurants are now more than 400 restaurants are now participating in that program in all 21 counties. So a really extraordinary program. That was, stood up in the last year or so and has continued to make a huge impact. And again, a great, I think, sign of confidence in that program from the governor and from the state in general to have additional funding announced late last week. We have taken applications. We opened on October 20th the applications for the Small Business Lease Grant Program, which is part of the Main Street Toolkit. We have a second Main Street program for your consideration in a few minutes, the Micro Business Loan. But the Small Business Lease Grant Program is for businesses that have taken new or expanded space on main streets. That's been, I think, extraordinarily well received. We've received almost 600 applications for that program, which, again, provides essentially a lease subsidy for businesses that are taking new or expanded space. Nearly 600 applications are a great sign of the continued interest in those programs. And then, again, we'll follow that hopefully in a few minutes with the microbusiness loan, forgivable loan program. The other thing I'll mention in terms of exciting things for today, you've got the NJZIP program, which has been before this board. We're bringing for further consideration and expansion of that program to include a number of different shore communities, put some more funding into it as well. It's been, I think, really well received. I'll let Victoria talk about that in a few minutes. But I think that's a really good indicator of, or excuse me, a really good sign of our priorities around, and the Governor Murphy's priorities, first and foremost, around clean energy and tying the clean energy agenda to a clean energy jobs agenda and supporting small business through a clean energy agenda. So a win-win-win in every direction there. The only other thing I'll mention is we broke ground on the hub project mid-October in New Brunswick. Really, I think, extraordinary project coming together in New Brunswick next to the train station there. Yeah, as you all mentioned, just real briefly, that's in my report. The Windport, obviously, we broke ground on construction there in September. Two really good pieces of news there. We got offers from six different companies, three manufacturers and three wind operators, wind companies. So we have the market has validated the extraordinary nature of that asset, and we're eager to begin negotiations with those parties and hopefully drive a number of great deals for the state in terms of jobs, in terms of capital investment, in terms of rent that they want to pay at the wind port. And the wind port itself actually won a national award late two weeks ago from a national infrastructure organization calling it the Strategic Infrastructure Project of the Year. So you don't have to take our word for it, as they say. This is a project that is getting national acclaim and attention, and obviously a lot of work to do and a lot of turning of vision into reality still to be done there, but extraordinary momentum in South Jersey and San Luis County around offshore wind in general. So with that, happy to take any questions, but I'll yield the floor back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Moving forward with our agenda, we'll have committee reporting. I'd like to highlight two recommendations considered by this month's policy committee: the shore expansion of New Jersey ZIP, which is the New Jersey Zero Emission Incentive Program, and an MOU with NJIT to support economic analysis around the feasibility of providing local access to the Newark Liberty International Airport train station. Initiatives like these will help to provide increased access to energy-efficient forms of transportation and will increase transportation opportunities for residents. I applaud these items as they represent important mission-driven initiatives that I'm proud to see the EDA moving forward. So the first item, the shore expansion of New Jersey ZIP, a voucher pilot for medium-duty zero-emission vehicles, Victoria Carey, Senior Project Officer, Clean Energy Programs, Economic Growth Presenting. Victoria.
Mr. Chairman, this is Danielle Lester. Really quick, before Victoria presents, I want to acknowledge that Board Member Vice Chairman Charles Sarlow is on the line and available for this vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Chairman.
Good morning. Just want to make sure everyone can hear me.
Yes.
Fantastic. So just a quick background and reminder of the context. The New Jersey ZIP, or NJZIP Zero Emission Incentive Program, is, as the chairman noted, a pilot voucher program. Vouchers essentially reduce the out-of-pocket cost to purchase a new zero-emission vehicle, most commonly referred to as electric vehicles or EVs. These vouchers cover the difference in cost from an electric vehicle to a similar gas or diesel vehicle. We are focused on medium-duty zero-emission vehicles, so you want to think of something sized from about a small delivery van up to something about the size of a rented moving truck or a hotel shuttle that you might pick up from an airport. The eligible communities for the pilot so far include the Greater Camden, the Greater Newark, and the Greater New Brunswick areas, with greater area meaning the communities centered on those municipalities and surrounded by a 10-mile radius. Overburdened communities within that radius are included in the pilot. The timeline to date, essentially, we've last come before the board with this in January of 2021. We launched in April of 2021 with $15 million for the Greater Camden and the Greater Newark areas. And we expanded through delegated authority by $9.25 million in September of 2021 to include the Greater New Brunswick area. So that in total means that our voucher pool has to date $24.25 million supporting those communities that I've noted that were selected based on a quantitative analysis of communities with the densest population and in the most economic need so that we could see the immediacy and importance of our impact. This voucher has been fully funded by the New Jersey EDA's allocation of REGI funding. REGI standing for the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which is essentially an interstate carbon auction. So the pilot has done exactly what it's been intended to so far. We have seen a significant and continuous demand, accounting for more than $15 million in the voucher queue at the end of Q3, which caused us to pursue the expansion that I referred to in the Greater New Brunswick area. And of the applications that we've received to date, more than three quarters of the applicants are small businesses, with 29 of those applicants being micro-businesses defined as businesses with five or fewer employees. And more than approximately half are minority and or women-owned businesses. So of those micro-businesses that I noted, 19 of those micro-businesses self-identify as people of color. Since we've opened to New Brunswick, another 3 million in applications have been received across all three greater areas, the Greater Camden, Greater Newark, and Greater New Brunswick area. In total, this accounts for approximately 150 vehicles that would receive vouchers given their approval. We've seen, just as a flow rate, about 10 applications a month. We've also, from the pilot, had learnings and opportunities to improve the pilot and gather more information. The quantitative method, basically, that we have used to select the pilot communities does not account for lower density areas and did have the unintended consequence of limiting use cases, with a much stronger focus in our applicant pool on last mile deliveries for trucks rather than passenger transportation. As such, we've not yet been able to assess how lower density populations, especially those that experience significant seasonal increases in traffic, can comply with program rules, and we've not yet been able to see the uptake related that we're hoping for related to passenger transportation. As such, we retooled the community selection methodology to deprioritize population density as a selection factor, with environmental justice priorities and economic need remaining as the deciding factors. With this, and to account for the lower density of populations, we are proposing that the Greater Shore area is the area we expand to. Essentially, this is defined as the entire Atlantic coast of New Jersey, extending 10 miles inland and including only the municipalities that have overburdened communities within them. With the ambition of expanding this program statewide next year, assuming continued positive performance and availability of funds, the insight that we gain from this pilot expansion will be material to ensuring the design accounts for all types of communities and all types of use cases statewide. In summary, our request today to the board is to expand the pilot voucher pool by $20 million in funding using REGI funds and to expand by location to include the Greater Shore area so that we can learn about these use cases before developing a statewide program to ensure the structure, compliance, and funding levels are appropriate for all use cases. Further, as stewards of 60% of the annual REGI proceeds, we also have the responsibility to roll out these monies efficiently. So expanding NJZIP now to the Greater Shore community and by $20 million for the remaining 2020 auction proceeds allows us to meet our obligations while we continue to learn from the pilot. We are not proposing any other programmatic changes at this time. We simply want to assess apples to apples the impact of the proposed new areas and the emphasis we'll be placing on passenger transportation. We're using this also as an opportunity to double down on our outreach to existing communities in the Greater Camden, Newark, and New Brunswick areas, and especially to small and micro businesses and minority women and veteran-owned businesses who can still take advantage of this program. And on the administrative front, we are requesting approval, in addition to the $20 million of voucher funds, a 2% statutorily permitted admin fee for this fund expansion, as well as to account for a 2% admin fee, which was not accounted for in the original pilot program on the New Brunswick area. Those admin fees come out to $585,000 in addition to that $20 million voucher pool, again, sourced from the REGI auction proceeds. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Victoria. Do we have any questions for Victoria?
Yes, good morning. Just a couple of quick questions, and I'm sorry if I missed this. Have all the pilot funds, original pilot funds, already been expended?
We've received applications for nearly $19 million in the original pilot pool, but they, since the expansion into the New Brunswick area in September, we have not yet completely allocated those funds.
Got it. Okay. And then I should actually just started with commending targeting the overburdened areas. I think this is a phenomenal program and excited both for the pilot and for the expansion. But just had one other quick question. You commented on the businesses self-identifying as minority or women-owned. So we didn't, we don't typically request for any state certification. We leave it to the businesses to self-identify.
We collect demographic, self-identified demographic data in addition to providing bonuses for those who are registered with the state as a minority business enterprise or woman business enterprise or a veteran-owned business.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for Victoria? If there's no questions for Victoria, can I get a motion to approve?
So moved, Moyo.
Thank you, Liz. Can I get a second?
Aisha Glover.
Thank you, Aisha. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. We're going to move to the incentives portion of our agenda. Ginny Bowers, the chair of our incentives committee, would you like to offer a few words in advance of the incentive items under discussion today?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The incentive committee met on October 28th, and we had discussed another number of film and digital tax credits, but most notably what you had mentioned in your remarks, the Aspire program, the new rules and proposed rules, which will encourage commercial and mixed-use and residential real estate projects here in New Jersey. So thank you for that.
Great. Thank you, Jenny. So the item under consideration is the special adopted new rules and concurrent proposed new rules for the Aspire program. Nat Bodenheimer, Director of Real Estate Investment Programs, Economic Growth Products, presenting. Nat.
Great. Thank you very much. So let me just begin with an overview of the program. Aspire was established under the Economic Recovery Act in 2020 and in January of this year and amended in cleanup legislation passed last July. It's the successor to the Economic Recovery and Growth Program, more frequently known as ERG. And like ERG, the Aspire program provides tax credits to incentivize strategic real estate projects around the state. The tax credit awards under Aspire are based on an evaluation of project-level financial need, and the program is intended by supporting commercial and residential growth to strengthen communities and create local benefits and encourage growth in communities with the greatest levels of distress. Recognizing the importance of husbanding public resources, the program includes a range of protections that ensure public funds will be targeted to the highest need, and the Aspire program will continue accepting applications until March 1st of 2027. Since you've been briefed on the Emerge Job Attraction and Retention Program in the past, you'll know that Aspire shares an annual program cap with Emerge of $1.1 billion for a period of 6 years. In the seventh year, any unused program funds can be rolled over for that seventh year, and program awards are allocated in the amount of $715 million per year to North Jersey projects and $385 million a year for projects in South Jersey. A typical Aspire project will be eligible to receive tax credit awards up to 45% of project costs in nominal dollars. Commercial projects in a government-restricted municipality can receive a tax credit reward up to 50% of project costs, and new construction projects using low-income housing tax credits can receive tax credits up to 60% of project costs. There's also transformative projects, which are projects with a minimum of $100 million in project costs, which can receive up to $350 million in tax credit awards and are subject to a separate program cap of $2.5 billion over the life of the program. And other key features of Aspire are a 10-year eligibility period, which is the period during which tax credits are awarded and prevailing wage rates must be paid, and over which net benefits are calculated. And for projects over $10 million in project costs, negotiation and support for a community benefits agreement. So as part of the presentation, I'm going to go into a little more detail on a couple of different aspects of the program covering award sizes, project eligibility, fiscal and resident protections, transformative projects, and finally, proposed Aspire program fees. Let me start with award sizes. As I mentioned earlier, that a typical or baseline Aspire-eligible project can receive credits up to 45% of project costs to a ceiling of $42 million. There are some bonuses that build up from this baseline. If you're a commercial project in a government-related, government-restricted municipality, you can receive credits up to 50% of project costs. As I mentioned before, for newly constructed residential projects, using low-income housing tax credits, you can receive credits up to 60%. And if you're a project using low-income housing tax credits or in a project in one of the geographies that are called out specifically in the program, you can receive tax credits up to $60 million. And those are qualified investment tracts and also, I apologize for that, there's a sorry, I believe I can't quite remember the other specific geography, but it's a measure of economic distress, and projects in those geographies qualify up to $60 million. The program prioritizes projects in planning. Yep. Sorry. The program prioritizes projects in Planning Area 1, as defined by the New Jersey State Plan, which is generally the most populous New Jersey suburbs of New York and Philadelphia, as well as separate historic urban places in New Jersey, such as Trenton, Atlantic City, Vineland, and others. There are a few other areas, including port districts, the aviation district around Atlantic City, and places within a half a mile of rail or high-frequency bus transit that are also within Planning Area 2 or within a state plan designated center. And for the transformative program, which we'll be discussing later, film projects can be located anywhere in the state. In terms of eligibility for project size, a residential Aspire project must have costs of at least $5 million if it's located in a qualified incentive tract or a government-restricted municipality, $17.5 million if it's located in a municipality with a population greater than 200,000, which is basically Jersey City and Newark, or $10 million if it's located anywhere else. And if it's a commercial project, the minimum is square footage as opposed to cost space. So it's a minimum 100,000 square feet to qualify for the Aspire program. The Economic Recovery Act required EDA to score Aspire projects, but didn't specify a scoring rubric or use. At present, we don't anticipate a volume of applications that would result in oversubscription of the program, so we're proposing a scoring approach that allows projects that advance the program's policy priorities to move forward into the program and to use the scoring rubric to assure that. So if at any point we anticipate demand for Aspire resources to exceed resources available, our intent is to convert the scoring system from its current gating philosophy to one that supports a competitive funding program instead. The scoring system we're proposing is based on five questions, and a qualifying response for each question would earn a single point, and to qualify for the Aspire program, 5 points out of the five available would be required. And the questions we propose asking are, will the project invest in and improve the public realm of the community where it's located? For projects with a housing component, will the project increase workforce housing opportunities? Well, for any project, except for film projects, does the project use smart growth investment and project design to increase travel choice and reduce environmental impacts? For projects located in an overburdened community, does the project create new unsupported environmental impacts? And if it's located in a FEMA-designated 100-year flood zone, has the applicant conducted a self-assessment of the project's climate resilience? And we can discuss the memo includes more details on the scoring questions, and we can discuss those afterwards if you'd like. But in the interest of time, I'll move forward. To qualify for Aspire funding, a project must show that it has a funding or financing gap, where the financing gap refers to the part of total development cost, including reasonable and appropriate return on investment, that remains to be financed after all of the sources of capital have been accounted for. The benchmark we'll be using here is reasonable and appropriate return on investment, And to figure out what that is, for each project, we'll be developing a target rate of return that's based on the specific location, industry class, extent of local economic disadvantage, and other factors to set a project-specific benchmark rate of return, which we use throughout the project's life for evaluating project success and related program elements, including excess return sharing with the Department of Treasury. I'm sure you all know that prevailing wages must be paid and are required for all project costs during project construction, but it's also important to emphasize that for both the Aspire and Transformative programs, prevailing wages will be required for all building services and maintenance throughout the eligibility period, as well as for any project costs that have been incurred prior to application that applicants would like to include as eligible project costs. And finally, it's important to note that failure to comply with this, these provisions will be grounds for withholding of tax credits and other possible penalties. A couple of final points about project eligibility. First, projects must receive a letter of support by the time of application from the governing body of the municipality, which is effectively the municipal council or its equivalent, where the project will be located. As well, projects must meet affirmative action requirements, environmental and sustainability standards, and they will have to acknowledge the need to meet these standards and provide a description of how they will be met. So now I'll talk a little bit about another category of the program characteristics related to fiscal and resident protections, and the first of these is the community benefits agreement. So a really innovative element of the Aspire program is the requirement that any project with project costs above $10 million must negotiate, finalize, and support a community benefits agreement before obtaining project certification. An assigned agreement with the chief executive of the host municipality is required at project certification. But at the time of project approval by the board, all that's required is a letter saying that they'll negotiate the community benefits agreement in good faith with the applicant. And project certification is, of course, the time after the project has been constructed and we verify the project economics and begin the process of permitting and authorizing tax credit awards. The applicant will have 6 months and 2 3-month extension periods after the approval by the board to negotiate the community benefits agreement. And the Economic Recovery Act also requires, from the point of view of community involvement and transparency, the appointment of a community benefits advisory committee with at least 3 members, none of whom have an interest in the project or community benefits agreement programming, and the committee must meet publicly and transparently at least once prior to the finalization of the community benefits agreement and must certify developer compliance with the terms of the community benefits agreement each year over the eligibility period. And these protections are especially important because of the resources that EDA is proposing to make available for the CBAs, and as proposed, tax credit awards equivalent of up to 5% of eligible project costs are available for these to resource these community benefits agreements, and we can talk a little bit more detail about how that 5% is calculated. But the key point about this is that real resources are being brought to the communities where Aspire projects are being being funded and built, and this increases the benefit that these projects will bring to communities around the state. In terms of fiscal and resident protections, as with EDA programs like Emerge, projects in Aspire are subject to a net benefit test. The application of this test is subject to a few important details, and the first is that the test is more stringent for communities that are not government-restricted municipalities. And so for projects in GRMs, the threshold level of benefits is 150% of the requested tax credit award. And for all other locations, the threshold level of benefits is 185% of the requested award. And no net benefit test is required for residential projects or for food service and healthcare centers. that are over 10,000 square feet in size. It's an important caveat. We'll be using the IMPLAN model, which is a standard economic tool for measuring benefit, and so it'll be replicable and transparent, widely understood. We'll be measuring construction benefits, and we'll be looking at direct, indirect, and induced tax revenues at the state level. For ongoing benefits, we'll be measuring direct and indirect tax revenues at the state level. And because these are real estate projects with less precise certainty about what the kinds of jobs are as opposed to the eMERGE program, we're going to be using regional average salaries and employment densities that are characteristic of the real estate space that's being proposed. And so this is going to make, this is going to, I think, create replicability from project to project and avoid the issue of imposing a real administrative burden on the developers that we're partnering with to check who the employees are for, you know, all of the tenants that they have over time. And it'll avoid us having to worry about, you know, changing the benefits analysis later on in a project, you know, if we've been, if one kind of employee pool has been advertised, but, you know, another kind is eventually what is tenanted. So that's a key feature of how we'll be looking at benefits. So just a couple more items before I wrap up. The transformative projects and fees. For transformative projects, whereas the base tax credit award for the Aspire program is 45% of eligible project costs, for the transformative program it's a little lower. It's capped at 40%. But whereas the Aspire program credits top out at $60 million for a project, for the transformative program, the maximum award tops out at $350 million. Transformative projects must be located in an incentive area, a distressed municipality, a government-restricted municipality, or an enhanced area, and they must also construct or involve the substantial rehabilitation of at least 500,000 square feet of space. For film studio projects, the minimum space requirement is half that, 250,000 square feet, and they also may be located anywhere in the state. Finally, in terms of transformative residential projects, they are required to develop a minimum of 1,000 units or develop at least 100,000 square feet of commercial space, and in a GRM, at least 250 units, if an enhanced area, 350 units, or any other place, 600 units. And finally, for any residential project that in a transformative program, they must provide at least 20% of the units for low and moderate income households, and ensure that no more than 50% of the project space is for retail uses. I'll wrap up with just a brief note about the fees. They're laid out in detail in the memo, but a couple of key points. First is, we developed the fees alongside of an estimate of the administrative cost of the authority of administrating the Aspire program over the program's life. The fees are determined on a tiered basis based on the project type and project cost, with a separate tier for transformative projects. Project cost and type of project is kind of a proxy in our minds for the complexity of a project and how much staff time is required to evaluate an application. And the tiers we identified for the purposes of developing fees include projects using low-income housing tax credits, projects that are less than $50 million in cost, projects that are more than $50 million. Any project that applies under the regular Aspire program with approved phases, and obviously a phased project is going to be more complicated, and transformative projects, which are obviously likely to involve phasing and have much larger size. And because of the tiering approach that we've, that we've adopted, we're going to be indifferent to, you know, whether a project is a little bit larger or a little bit smaller when it comes to thinking about setting fees. And so that schedule is fixed. There are plenty of more details, but we can get to those in question and answers. To the extent that you have them. So that'll wrap up my overview and look forward to taking your questions.
Great. Thank you, Nat. Do we have questions for Nat? All right, if we have no questions for Nat, can I get a motion to approve?
Fred Dumont, motion.
Thank you, Fred. Can I get a second?
Noreen Giblin, second.
Thank you, Noreen. Any discussion? There's no discussion. All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
This is Rosemarie. Right. I abstain. I just got on the call, so I didn't hear enough to really vote on it. Thanks.
All righty. Thank you. Thank you, Rosemarie. Moving to the next item on our agenda, the Film and Digital Media Tax Credit. There will be one presentation and then three individual votes on Universal Television LLC, Due Season Movie LLC, and Audible Inc. Matthew Abram, Director, Tax Credit Programs, Economic Growth Presenting. Matthew.
Thank you, and good morning, Chairman and Board members. EDA staff has completed the review and recommends the approval of three applications under the Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program. Two applications under the Film Tax Credit Program and one application under the Digital Media Tax Credit Program, as the Chairman mentioned. We received written confirmation from an outside firm hired to review the production budgets to make sure each is responsible within each are responsibly within the industry standards. All the film content has been reviewed and recommended for approval under the Act by the New Jersey Motion Picture and Television Commission. Total credits utilized across the two recommended film approvals is just over $2.5 million. Total credits utilized under the digital media program is just over $7 million. The first film application under consideration is Universal Television LLC, who produce Echo, which pilot. We are recommending an award of $2,047,561.17. The second application is Due Season Movie LLC, which will produce Due Season. We are recommending an award of $509,471.23. This project includes a 2% diversity bonus, a diversity plan bonus worth of $27,553.58. Lastly, the members are asked to approve one project under the Digital Media Credit Program. The applicant is Audible, Inc. for its 2020 audiobook production expenses. We're recommending an award of $7,047,240.20. This award includes a 2% diversity bonus worth $630,658.20. Each project, as the board, the chairman mentioned, needs its own separate vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew. So let us vote on the first tax credit, Universal Television LLC, a tax credit of almost $2.05 million. Can I get a motion to approve?
It's Jenny Bauer. I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Creedy, second.
Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye. I'm sorry, Chairman. I had a quick question. Did our diversity officer, I know we had talked about this at the last meeting, I know that you said two of the three are getting a diversity bonus. What about the third one? Did they choose not to, or do we have any idea about where that is? I mean, have
yes.
we started? Go ahead.
So the third one did not submit a diversity bonus plan.
Do we look at that as part of the review in terms of whether or not there is diversity, equity, and inclusion overall? Or is that only if they're going for the diversity bonus?
Hey, the statute sets up a framework where, yeah, if they wish to avail themselves of the bonus, they have to submit a diversity plan. And then if that plan is acceptable, then they're entitled to the 2% bonus. And so if they don't submit, then there's no review to be done.
Thank you.
All right. Do we have any more discussions before moving to a vote on Universal Television LLC? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Next item is Due Season Movie, LLC, a tax credit in the amount of almost $510,000. Can I get a motion to approve?
It's Jenny Bauer. I'll move it.
Can I get a second? Thank you, Fred. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. And then a digital media tax credit for Audible, Inc. in the amount of $7,050,000. Can I get a motion to approve?
So move, Giblin.
Second, Angela.
Thank you, Noreen. Can I get a second?
Caridi, second.
Thank you, Angela. Thank you, Rob. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
Aisha Glover, I have to recuse. Audible's my employer.
Thank you, Aisha. All right, moving to the next item on our agenda, loans, grants, and guarantees. The Main Street Micro Business Loan Program. Christina Fuentes, Managing Director, Small Business Services, Community Development, presenting. Christina.
Thank you, Chairman. This agenda item is requesting the approval to create a pilot product utilizing $20 million from the Main Street Recovery Fund established through the Economic Recovery Act of 2020 to create the Main Street Micro Business Loan. This product will replace the original microbusiness loan, which was established back in 2019. The Main Street Recovery Fund provides NJUDA with a $100 million appropriation to create products that share a common purpose of supporting the growth and success of small and micro businesses in New Jersey. As you may recall, we mentioned back in August that we would be coming back to board members with other products beyond the two initial grants that were approved, and this is one of those products. This version of the microbusiness loan will have key enhancements, such as the total funding will be increased, the eligibility will be broadened, 40% will be reserved for businesses located in eligible New Jersey Opportunity Zone and Census Tracts, and more flexibility will be provided on terms, collateral, and fees, including a substantially enhanced forgiveness component for a portion of the loan. This project will provide up to $50,000 in financing to support working capital expenses at very attractive and flexible terms to New Jersey-based microbusiness owners. Applicants who will be eligible for this product must meet the definition of a microbusiness by having less than 10 full-time employees at time of application and 1 quarter prior, and having $1.5 million or less in revenue based off their most recent federal tax returns the applicant was required to file. Eligible applicants can be New Jersey-based nonprofits, for-profits, or home-based businesses that have been operating for at least 6 months, are in good standing at time of application with New Jersey Department of Labor and Department of Environmental Protection, and provide a current tax clearance certificate prior to approval to demonstrate the applicant is in good standing with the New Jersey Division of Taxation. The guarantor for this program is any owner, and part of the eligibility criteria is that at least one owner would have to have at least one credit score from one of the three credit bureaus that is at least 600 as determined by the credit report. Nonprofit entities would have to proceed to underwriting and still need a 1.0 debt service cover ratio. Due to the favorable terms of this product, applicants with multiple locations under one EIN can only submit one application. This loan can cover future working capital expenses like rent payments, mortgage payments, utilities, marketing expenses, inventory, and equipment that needs to be purchased and that would not require a major installation. Home-based businesses cannot use the loan towards the residential costs like mortgage or lease payments, and ineligible uses for this product are remaining stock purchases like cars, vans, tractors, refinancing our existing debt, construction labor contracts, over $1,999.99 in costs, personal costs, or obligations unrelated to the business. The terms of this product would be 10 years with no payments or interest in the first year after closing. Payments start at the beginning of the second year. A 2% interest rate will be, at approval, and no payments or modifications will be allowed prior to the end of the fifth year. All other modifications unrelated to the payment terms may be permitted throughout the term of the loan. No collateral is going to be required for this product, but personal guarantees are going to be required by all owners. The forgivable component for this product will be considered at the end of the fifth year after closing. At that point, the applicant will be eligible for loan forgiveness if the applicant has had the following: no defaults, no payment delinquencies over 90 days, and the business is deemed still open and operating by NJADA, then the remaining balance will be fully forgiven. The applicant will be required to provide the completed EVA open and operating certification form, and that would be required 60 days prior to the end of the fifth year. The form will be in their loan agreement, and the applicant will receive a reminder to submit their form as well, and then the balance will be fully forgiven at the end of the fifth year if the applicant is deemed eligible. If the applicant delays in providing their information to verify they're still open and operating, then payments remain until information is received by EDA. Potentially, their balance forgiven could be less if they delay in providing the necessary information to EDA. If an applicant is not eligible for forgiveness, then payment terms remain in effect for the full term of the loan. Staff is recommending NJADA to utilize a 3% administrative fee for the total funding request towards administrative costs to allow for reduced application fees to the public, and staff is requesting $250,000 to cover any costs associated to hiring temps to process applications as well. Staff is also recommending a partial fee waiver of the standard application fee and closing fee due to the negative impact of the pandemic on most microbusinesses. Microbusinesses need operating support to really help them survive during this recovery stage, but they also experience challenges accessing capital at attractive terms, and this is why staff is proposing to reduce application fees to the public. A reduced application fee of $100 will be collected at time of application instead of the traditional $300 fee, with a flat closing fee of $400 to be paid at the time of closing to receive the loan proceeds, rather than taking the normal fee of 0.875% of the loan amount at both time of commitment and again at closing. So the total fee now under this pilot to the applicant would just be $500 in order to access up to $50,000. The final recommendation is for staff to have the ability to approve and decline for non-discretionary reasons, and that will be done through delegated authority as it's highlighted in the specifications that we provided. I'm happy to take any questions.
Do we have any questions for Christina?
I just wanted to commend the staff for increasing the loan forgiveness or grant portion of it. It's an innovative structure, and I hope to see other microloans with this structure. Thank you.
Yes, thanks, Marcia. I think on one of the committee calls, I think this is the kind of a structure, the sort of forgivable loan, sort of hybrid grant that we will, I think, likely, particularly in things like clean energy and some of the other lending tools that are a little bit sort of innovative lending tools, where I think the structure has a lot of merit to it because it gives us an opportunity to advance the policy priorities in addition to supporting the actual business or enterprise or project. So, yeah, thank you, Lucy. I appreciate it.
Any other questions or comments for Christina?
Hi, this is Rosemarie. Christina, great job.
let me just start there. I just have one quick question, and I know it's the main street, and you said that people can't use it for vehicles. What if you're talking about a trucking company or a company that their primary business is transportation? So would they be ineligible?
No, they're not ineligible. They just have to put it towards working capital expenses so it can support their payroll, or if they lease or own the property, any type of payments related to that property, or if they want to hire new people, the utilities, so anything to really operate that location. If they want to, you know, do some type of specialized marketing or e-commerce platform, they can also utilize it for that. If they have to buy some type of new computer, you know, software, something like that, that's what it's really meant to support. It's just, it couldn't go towards buying any type of new, like, if they need to buy something like a truck or something like that, it would not support that. It has to be towards working capital expenses.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Other comments or questions? All right, if we have no more comments or questions for Christina, can I get a motion to approve?
Motion to approve, Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia. Can I get a second?
Caridi seconds.
Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Yes.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Moving to the Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Fund. We have one, two, three projects here. Summary of NJDEP Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Fund program projects approved by the Department of Environmental Protection. David Lawyer, Managing Director, Underwriting, presenting. David.
Thank you. Under DEP's Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Program, we have three municipal supplemental applications from the City of Patterson. The first request is $18,687, and the proceeds will be used to fund costs associated with site investigation and preliminary assessment at a former industrial site. Prior approvals to the city for this specific project totals $575,000. It is the applicant's intent upon full site remediation to redevelop the site for recreational use. The second request is $243,431, and the proceeds will be used to fund costs associated with preliminary assessment and remedial investigation at the former Allied Textile printing site. Excuse me. Prior approvals to the city for this specific project totals $1.031 million. It is the applicant's intent upon full site remediation to redevelop the site for recreational use. The last request from the City of Patterson is $1.6 million, and the proceeds will be used to fund costs associated with remedial action also at the former Allied Textile printing site. Again, once remediated, the site will be used for recreational purposes. Back to you, Mr. Chairman. Back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Sorry about that, David. I was on mute. Talking to myself. Yeah, tricky. Any questions for David? If there's no questions for David, can I get a motion to approve?
Yeah, I just have a this is Aisha. I just have a quick question on what is the intended recreational use?
For
do we have a plan or anything for the site?
Yes, for the last two requests, that will encompass a walking path, event space, and additional green space for passive recreation, which is part of their overall redevelopment master plan. The first request, that is recreational space related to the Great Falls National Historical Park site.
Got it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for David? Can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Second, Giblin.
Thank you, Nadine. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda is the summary of NJDEP Petroleum UST Remediation Upgrade and Closure Fund Program projects approved by the Departmental of Environmental Protection. David, if you could continue, please.
Thank you. Under DEP's PUST program, we have one residential and one not-for-profit application seeking approval. Both requests require board approval as each amount exceeds EDA staff's $100,000 delegation. The proceeds of both grants will be used to remove a leaking underground storage tank and complete the required remediation. The first request is from Victor Santos in the amount of $114,916. And the second request is from St. Luke's Episcopal Church in the amount of $123,230. Thank you.
Great. Do we have any questions for David? If there's no questions for David, can I get a motion to approve?
This is Rosemary.
Thank you, Rosemary. Can I get a second?
It's Jenny. I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, moving to bond projects. This is for the defeasance and redemption of certain outstanding NJEDA school facility construction bonds. And there's a handful of these. Lori Zagarella, Program Manager, Bond Compliance, presenting. Lori.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everybody. Thank you. This request is to authorize the authority to defease and redeem a portion of the NJEDA's $4.8 billion schools facilities construction bonds, which were issued in various series from 2012 to 2019 to reduce the amount of bonds owed and outstanding and debt service costs paid by the state. This request is made in coordination with and direction from the Treasurer and the Attorney General's Office. The funds will come from the New Jersey Debt Defeasance and Prevention Fund within the state's general fund, of which $2.5 billion was appropriated for debt defeasance at the close of fiscal year 2021. A portion of a $2.5 billion appropriation will be used to defease a portion of the school's facilities construction bonds. Treasury expects to make a preliminary decision on which of the school's facilities bonds will be defeased in the next month. In addition to approving an authorized officer, CEO, or his or her designee, to execute the necessary documents to defease the bonds, the members are also asked to approve the use of the professionals chosen by an RFQ-RFP process performed by the AG's office on behalf of Treasury. Bond Counsel Chaisi Shahinian and Jean Tomasi, Treasury, and AG's office have reviewed and approved this request. Happy to answer any questions you may have.
Do we have any questions for Lori? If we have no questions for Lori, can I get a motion to approve?
So moved, Angela.
Oh. Thank you, Rob. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Let's move to the next item on the agenda, defeasance and redemption of certain outstanding NJEDA cigarette tax revenue refunding bonds, Series 2012. Lori, if you could continue, please.
Yes, thank you. This request is actually similar to the previous request, authorizing the authority to defease and redeem a portion of the NJEDA's $437 million cigarette tax revenue refunding bonds, which were issued in 2012. This request is made in coordination with and direction from the Treasurer and the Attorney General's Office. The funds will come from the New Jersey Debt Defeasance and Prevention Fund, of which $2.5 billion was appropriated for debt defeasance at the fiscal year 2021. A portion of a $2.5 billion appropriation will be used to defease a portion of the cigarette tax refunding bonds. In addition to approving an authorized officer to execute the necessary documents to defease the bonds, the members are also asked to approve the use of the professionals chosen by an RFQ process, performed by AG's office on behalf of Treasury, Bond Counsel, and Treasury and AG's office have reviewed and approved this request. Happy to answer any questions.
Great. Do we have any questions for Lori? We have no questions for Lori. Can I get a motion to approve?
Motion to approve. Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia. Can I get a second?
Caridi seconds.
Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, moving forward on the agenda, authority matters. We have an MOU with the NJIT for Airport City Newark. George Santos, Chief Staff, presenting. George.
Thank you, Chairman. The members are requested to approve an MOU with NJIT to provide $50,000 in matching funds to pursue a U.S. EDA grant around a real estate economic analysis around Newark Liberty International Airport Station. For way of background, the train station by the airport has no direct neighborhood access. It is only accessible from the AirTrain or through another station. And there has been a lot of discussion in recent years about either reopening that station to the neighborhood or adding, extending the PATH train to the airport. To those ends, New Jersey Institute of Technology has been leading a coalition of different groups around the airport city concept that is looking at both the transit-oriented development around the station, but also how to maximize economic development in an airport support fashion, and kind of leveraging the airport and the industry there. The coalition, as I said, is led by NJIT, includes the City of Newark, Port Authority, Regional Plan Association, NJTPA, other partners. The grant, EDA, is a rolling grant for their planning and local technical assistance, and NJIT would be pursuing $125,000. We would add our $50,000. And they would bring on technical assistance to perform, as I said, a real estate economic analysis for the neighborhood there. Bless you. Are there any questions?
Any questions for George?
This is Aisha. More just of a comment. I think this is important and definitely feels noble, but I would also just, and maybe this isn't really directed at EDA, it's more just at the Port Authority, that would be such, the PATH train extension would have so much more greater impact, so it's not just enough that they put it in the capital plan 5 or 6 years ago. I think we should also just think about what our role is if we're matching or funding or, you know, kind of getting behind this other effort. This could really just be solved with the Port Authority prioritizing the allocation of funds in their capital plan for the train extension.
Yeah, hey.
Thank you, Aisha.
Obviously a longer discussion, but I think the getting that project right for the city of Newark and for the neighborhood and nearby Elizabeth, which is right there too, incredibly important. No, leaving it there.
All right. Any other observations or questions for George? If there's no questions or more comments for George, can I get a motion to approve?
Moyo,
so
Jenny Bell, I'll move it.
Thank you, Liz. Jenny, can I have you second this?
Certainly, Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move to the next item under authority matters, the contract award 2021 RFP for Microsoft Cloud Development and Support Services. Thomas Murphy, Chief Information Officer, and Ted Finikos, Senior Procurement Officer, Internal Process Management, presenting.
Sorry, just real quick before Thomas said, real quick before you take the mic, out of an abundance of caution, I've recused myself from this matter as a procurement matter. Again, out of an abundance of caution, there's a person at the company who's been going to be recommended for this award that I used to work with a long time ago, and I've never discussed this this matter with that person, but just out of an abundance of caution, have been out of the procurement process here. So, Tom, over to you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a recommendation for award for Microsoft Cloud Development Partner for a two-year term with 3 or 1 year extensions for up to $10 million through task orders. Just a brief history, we've had 5 years of, 7 years of a partner that was a public bid. We did a legacy conversion over to a cloud version of a Microsoft platform of Dynamics to track a lot of our data. Over the past 2 years, we've been working with that same partner to extensions with the portals. Because of the COVID programs, which you've heard the numbers earlier, we were used to like 500 to 1,000 applications a year. At some points, we were getting 30,000 hits of applications, so we had to utilize some additional Microsoft technologies with portals. It did mesh nicely with our already migrated legacy platform over to the CRM Dynamics. So we are going to ask to continue working with a partner through this award. We've identified several items that will all be done through task orders, determined through level of importance to the EDA, not of least of which is to continue delivering applications for the Economic Recovery Act through the portals platform. The general ledger that the EDA uses, which is Great Plains, is also end of life 2025, and that will be another item that will be slated to convert over to the Dynamics system, which Microsoft is migrating over there. So there are plenty of items listed there that we have a lot of work to do over the next 5 years to continue and build upon the efforts that we've started. As far as the details of the RFP, I will pass that over to Ted for a little bit more explanation or clarity.
Well, thank you, Tom. To Tom's point, this was a public procurement. The notice went to two newspapers. It was on our website under the bidding opportunities section. We utilized New Jersey Business Portal. We also utilized New Jersey Star, New Jersey Savvy, and email went to over 584 potential vendors and contacts. We received seven proposals. Six were responsive. The evaluation committee scored according to our criteria of personnel, experience of firm, ability of the firm to complete the scope of work and pricing, and based upon same Spruce Technology with the highest ranked firm. And we've made this recommendation. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ted and Tom.
Yep.
Do we have any questions for Ted or Tom?
Hi, this is Rosemary. Just for clarification, are we migrating from one system to a new one, or are we just adding on with this Microsoft platform?
So basically, we did the migration from our legacy system 5 years ago. When COVID hit, we expanded services to utilize additional Microsoft cloud platforms, which included the portals, the Power Automate. That's how we were able to do all of those grant programs because of the just the interface could handle the 30,000-plus applications. There are other things that we do need to migrate. And that's like a smaller general ledger that we use and just the accounting portion of, the back offices of the EDA. those will be just, but that's like a, would be a smaller task order, nothing like the 5-year legacy conversion that took, you know, with, you know, years with the data. There's also some items that we have to clean up from the rush of COVID, some deduplication, and we have to rewrite a couple hastily written workflows that can be done a little bit smarter if we have a little bit more time. Does that answer the question?
Sort of. So this is just a, it's a build. We're not, let's say, keeping an old legacy system or a vendor, and we've just added a new vendor. So we have two businesses or vendors doing basically the same thing, one old system, one new system. This is just a migration to consolidate processing or that platform into a more comprehensive product?
We are utilizing some of the Microsoft platforms more fully. Some of them are end of life, but right now at this time, we really aren't running any legacy platforms anymore except the internal accounting system. And that would be just one of the, but that's not a huge lift. That's a very small task order. It's just more getting accounting's time to do that. But everything we have right now is mainly converted. We are putting everything out in the new Microsoft, brand new Microsoft platforms. We just do not have a lot of expertise on staff, and it is incredibly hard to get programmers in this marketplace. That's why we are choosing to work with Microsoft Gold Level partners to assist us with some of the a lot of these development efforts. And it's not by lack of trying. We have been in the marketplace for the past 7 years trying to, you know, bolster our internal staff. But unfortunately, we've just lost full-time programmers. And we have relied heavily on consultants, both through the contract, the state contract, CompAid, and also these gold partners, you know, that companies that have been awarded public bids with us.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any more questions, observations for Tom and Ted? If we have no,
if I could, Chairman, irrespective of, or not specific to this procurement of this matter, while Tom has the mic, take a moment to give a shout out in particular to the IT team, particularly during COVID. Not only were we able to run our operations internally seamlessly, but our ability to serve clients and serve customers through the grant program, the hundreds of thousands of applications we've taken in, more or less without a hitch, is not. Of extraordinary and deep appreciation of Tom and the team in ITS. So we'll take that moment to recognize him.
Thank you very much.
Great. Any other questions or observations? All right. Can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Second,
I just need 1 second. Thank you, Marcia. Do we have any discussion? There's no discussion. All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move to the next item on the agenda, board memoranda. Tim Sullivan, CEO, presenting. Tim.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. We have six different routine business delegated authority memos in your pack. I won't go through them in great detail, other than to note that there's an extraordinary amount of effort and time that goes into these things that show up as memos, but tons of work behind the scenes on a variety of programs, not the least of which are things like the Angel Tax Credit Program, Ignite, Accelerate, the ZIP program that Victoria talked about earlier in the program, Film and Digital Media. So a ton of work that goes into this, and I want to just again thank the staff for their efforts behind the scenes to make this all happen. Happy to take any questions on anything in those memos.
Thank you, Tim. I'd now like to open the public comment portion of the meeting. I'd first like to ask Danielle Esser to read the NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this telephonic board meeting. Danielle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As stated by the operator at the beginning of the meeting, members of the public interested in providing public comment can press 1, then 0 on their phone to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. We'd like to go over the public comment policy now, which is also available on the NJEDA website. Each speaker will be prompted by the operator to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization affiliation, and the topic on which the remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit their comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. The speaker may not register to comment more than once during the same public comment period. Speakers may provide related documents, printed comments, or materials attached to an email. We look forward to receiving your public comments at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, and again, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the number. Once again, if you have a question, please press 1, then 0. And one moment for our first question. And that question is from Charlie Cradleville. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Can the board members hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Thank you, Charlie.
Great. Good to be with you on the phone this morning. No questions today per se, but I did want to just reiterate the concerns about the New Brunswick Development Corporation and their scheme that has resulted in New Brunswick having one less public school than we did at the start of the pandemic. Of course, I'm talking about the Lincoln Annex School, which was displaced to facilitate an expansion of the Robert Wood Johnson Hospital campus. This project was putting the cart before the horse, and the students who benefited from having a good, recently refurbished community school in their own neighborhood are now being bused to a industrial zone in the city where they attend classes in a converted warehouse building. And I encourage all the board members to check it out for yourself. That's at 40 Van Dyke Avenue. Next time you're in New Brunswick, cruise on by there and see what DevCo has done to the next generation. And, you know, while there's obviously a need for higher education and scientific research and, provision of health care and certainly cancer treatment being noble goals, we can't do that at the expense of low-income kids who need to get a K-12 education so they can go to higher ed and can assist with these other noble goals. And unfortunately, we have a crisis of priorities here in the city of New Brunswick where developers like DevCo get what they want, and people like the low-income kids of the Lincoln Annex School are viewed as obstacles in the way of development. So I know that, the EDA is continuing to work with DevCo on an additional development project, which was mentioned in the CEO's report. And I would caution you not to do business with DevCo until they deliver a replacement public school to replace the one that they stole from our community. This is just wrong, and I think it should not stand, and I think folks who are in positions of power like you should be taking a stand against it and demanding that the community get the benefits that were promised. And unfortunately, we all know when you're doing redevelopment, you can make people move twice or you can make people move once. They should have built the new school first, and the kids could be in a new school. And I don't think anybody would object to using the old site for expansion of the hospital in that case. But in this case, the kids were viewed as an obstacle. They were kicked out. They've been made to move into a warehouse building. And, their education is going to suffer as a result of that. Many parents in the community don't have vehicles or driving privileges and can't necessarily transport their kids to and from school on a day when, for instance, the bus doesn't come on time, or the kid misses the bus, or the kid has to go in late or come home early. And, you know, this is an industrial zone where, you know, most parents probably don't want to send their kids during the day. So I would encourage you to keep all this in mind as DEVCO continues their machinations and seeks support from this board for their projects. Keep in mind those 700 kids. Just wanted to remind you of that this morning, and thank you for having me and hearing me out.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you. And again, if there are any additional questions, please press 1 then 0 at this time. And at this time, there are no questioners in queue.
Great. Thank you, operator. If there's no additional comments, I'd like to thank everyone for their participation today. I'll now make a motion to adjourn the meeting. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Giblin, second.
Thank you, Jenny. Thank you. All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you, everyone. This concludes our meeting. Enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday with your family.
You too.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Enjoy, everybody.
Thank you, and that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conference service. You may now disconnect.
We're sorry. Your conference is ending now. Please hang up.